All right, welcome back, everybody. Ellis Cannon, third and final hour, KDK Radio Midday. I've got all this stuff around me here. Let's finish strong, all right? Number one, the market. Continue to get updates. I guess it's still positive for the day, which is good. It was heftily? It was up a hefty amount, which is good. And by the way, I'm still getting emails about my mischaracterization and definition of epidemiologists. Who wrote this one? I'm going to find it. Hold on. Guy wrote and said, dermatology is skin, not being an epidemiologist. Dermatologist is a skin doctor. This comes from unnamed 412. And if you missed that, it's because of a reference made in an obituary I found about a gentleman by the name of Fred Greenstein, who's 88, passed away at a political psychological profile, and he used to assess presidents. And the more that I hear him talk about presidents, and I'm going to go through these six again, I was thinking about this during the break. We're going to get to Michael Flynn and whatever the heck is going on there, and back to the market, whatever the heck is going on there. Those are basically the key drivers today. And the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful message from the Malinger and Wedner families, of course, in relation to the synagogue murders. A thank you message. I'm going to read it again. You heard a guy who's been in the Marines say that he got choked up as he heard me read it. And I do want to spend a moment on that, because I've always been of the mind that when you go to people who are suffering, and they can, in fact, through whatever source, make you feel better, which is contrary to perhaps why you venture into their world at that moment, which is to make them feel better. But in fact, they make you feel better. That's extraordinarily special. That's what that thank you message does. And I'm going to read it in case you missed it earlier. What it says about Pittsburgh, what it says about things we may consider to be small, that are in fact very, very big. But before I go any further, so Brock doesn't come in here, if you know any ordinary individuals doing extraordinary things, here's a game plan. Nominate them now for Larry's Hometown Heroes. Just go to kdkradio.com for more information. I have one other one to read to you. It says 220. It's about the Seven Fishes broadcast. If Brock doesn't distract me, I'll be able to read them on time. Michael Flynn. That was extraordinary. The judge really, really railed against him today in the truncated sentencing. If you missed it, Rose's been reporting it. He went in, thought today was going to be the sentencing day, and now it's been punted about 90 to 120 days downfield. And the judge was none too happy. We only get excerpts. We don't get maybe other caveats or positive things or things of that sort, because people aren't in the room, at least with electronics. And as a result of that, you only get what you get. But when the guy brings up treason, and he's sentencing you, and he says he doesn't feel compelled to follow what the prosecution has suggested, which is, in this case, zero time. That would make me, A, wonder what type of attorneys I have who thought it was a good idea to file a piece of paper the other day suggesting that Mr. General Flynn may have been misled by the FBI in this investigation. I want to make sure I'm clear. The special prosecutor said he had provided, quote unquote, substantial cooperation and was recommending no time. At that point, you're filing as a blank piece of paper. The defendant had to today disavow that in court. I would disavow my attorneys today in court. You're fired. Thanks. I mean, if somebody says zero time when the national security advisor of the United States of America is about to be sentenced as a convicted felon and not have any time to serve, you need, dare I say, shut up. That'd be one reaction I have. The second one is, oh man, this judge doesn't sound like he's all that thrilled with what I did or what he sees me doing or what I pled to doing. The judge basically said you acted against your country. This is a judge that conservative people, conservative pundits hail. And the third takeaway is I'm just thinking when you say we'll come back after we're done with you fully cooperating. There'll be people out there saying, well, he's an activist, he's pushing, he's got an agenda. Well, yeah. Okay, everybody went to law school. But the truth of the matter is that it is extraordinary, it is unusual, and it would not be the worst take to suggest that possibility is you need to go clean this up because I'm not quite sure yet that you're getting this. I don't know if that means he's left some chicken on the wing, on the bone, and not given everything to date. I know that's the case with Michael Cohen. I thought we were done here. Just the fact we're not done here is a compelling story. So this other thing I had read about with Dr. Greenstein, is he has these six keys to how you evaluate the success or failure of a president. And then when I brought that up, we had some good conversation, and Dave called and he said, hey, in the military, we had 10. I didn't have the time to ask him what those 10 are. If you're military, you could tell me what those 10 are or anything of that sort, perhaps different branches, different whatever. It intrigued me enough during one of the breaks to say, wait a second. Okay, this doctor, this specialist from Princeton University, had a checklist that included, or was comprised of, public communication, organizational capacity, political skill, vision, cognitive style, and emotional intelligence. I don't know what the latter is. He considers it to be the most important. He describes it as being, it's measured by the president's ability to manage his emotions and turn them to constructive purposes rather than being dominated by them, I guess stewing, and allowing them to diminish his leadership. That does help. Cognitive style is important to me because that's critical to how you literally can do so many things at once and be sharp and on point. All these lead to leadership. What other ones, however, are important in maybe the corporate world? I don't want to hear about a mission statement. I walked out of a meeting once when I heard mission statement. I don't have time for that. I want to know, is there a 5-point plan that you could tell me about, you could tell us about? And the economy. We've heard earlier from Jamie Meredith. I've given you a lot of numbers. This is a broad-based decline. What do you think? How does the turbulence affect you? What it means to you when we come back at KDK Radio. Welcome back, everybody. Ellis Cannon. I must tell you that the Dollar Bank Instant Access is a real hit. I see the email address of the sender. I see the full name, and it allows me to be a better host because I can identify you and read through your thoughts, and I respect you putting your thoughts and your name together. Obviously, the text line is a big winner. I get a lot of material from it. It has been a bit of a change for me because I really never use it that much. And particularly if you're unnamed, you apparently feel the freedom to say things that unnamed people can say, I guess, even though I have your phone number. And that's a little less comfortable. So let's do this. When you do hit us up on the instant access, obviously, the Dollar Bank is an access to kdkradio.com. Do that. But also, when you hit me up with the text machine, 866-391-1020, and you do that, please give me your name and where you're from, if you don't mind. And that way it's almost like you're a caller. So I wrote that up because I had a gentleman call me unnamed and said, ask Jamie what he's thought about Greenspan. And that was absolutely next on the list. But one thing I've learned is somebody who is an expert, and particularly an expert that on a topic that is so important to so many people, less me, more them. Don't interrupt. Let them go on. They're helping in some ways you, even if they don't specifically address you. That's how this works. So I wrote back and I said, I'm so sorry. That was the next question. And I gave him that explanation. And I called him unnamed. And he writes back, not a problem. Ellis meet Roman. Roman meet Ellis. There, we officially know each other. Thank you, Roman. Be like that. But the economy is on people's minds and obviously is going to continue to be. And what you're doing, how you're dealing with all of this. I had another woman who did the instant access. She's got a great, great professional, and they're going to do what they always do. They're going to weather it out. See where that all goes. It's a lot different than 6 months ago, and we were hailing it, and a lot of people were hailing it. And as long as the economy stays strong, we should be okay. But let's just hope the economy stays strong. Hey, by the way, before I forget, join KDK Radio for the Seven Fishes broadcast with Rob Pratt on Christmas Eve at Coons Market on McKnight Road. Celebrate the season with holiday memories, great food, and your friends here at KDK Radio, brought to you by Coons Market, Keystone Mountain Lakes Regional Council of Carpenters, Rome Monuments, Ricci's Sausage, Federated Investors, and Straw Brewery. Talked to Rob the other day. He's all fired up about this. He said, it's all you, man. It's all you. You got to come. The only thing I'm going to suggest to you folks is get there early. Not just because there's going to be a lot of people there, but Brock is going to be there. And I've seen Brock when he eats, when I've seen Brock eat. When Brock eats his seven fishes now, I'm just saying. I don't know how much is going to be left. He's telling me in my ear he ain't going to be there. Okay. Sourpuss. Jerry and Homestead on the economy. What's going through your skull here, Jerry?
Here it is, Ellis. I have the highest respect, and I do believe what Jamie Meredith was saying. The thing again is, what they don't want to create is the depression. Do you understand that, number one?
Yep.
All right. What they want to create is a deflation of this economy. It's gone too sky high. They want to slowly let the pressure off of this, which they're doing, which I agree with they're doing. And the whole thing, again, is one of the big... Do you know who the biggest spender of our budget is?
The Pentagon.
And they do not have to answer to anybody. They have over tens of, maybe hundreds of trillions of dollars that they took off the taxpayers, and they do not have to answer and to anybody what they're doing with it. That's where our money is going. And like I said, the thing again is, I believe what he's saying, stick with your thing. Get involved with the Pittsburgh Business Times. And like I say, learn to follow the economy. And like I say, once you understand the economy, you understand, I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican, do not invest in foreign things unless you know what you're doing. That's all I want to say.
Hey, Jerry, good stuff. I appreciate it. I think the deinflation part that he mentions, or deflation part, there's something to it. That's the game. I don't want to get in the area I don't know, but let's just say the interest rate game is very important to inflation. Thanks. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate that. The studio audience. As a matter of fact, that was not only for Jerry, but also they just got word that Scott Stiller is next. All right, everybody. Welcome back to KDK Radio. Ellis Cannon. We're here till 3 o'clock. Appreciate you being out there. Appreciate your calls, your texts, your emails, and more. On a variety of issues, more specifically, we've been talking about Michael Flynn, that development today, and what to make of that. It seems like Mike Flynn's going to have a come to Jesus with somebody, just to be honest. Based on whatever it was that the judge was saying, and certainly whatever he was upset about, that went beyond what, frankly, even the special counsel was suggesting. So that's been held off until there's more cooperation, or the cooperation is finalized. I thought it was finalized. To tell you the truth, I didn't know we were going to open this back up, or for that matter, it was open-ended, or for that matter, that it could be sentenced as it was today, in effect, and that is delayed. A lot of people will throw that out as a judge trying to force him into living up to the plea agreement and the recommendation of no time in jail by giving more dirt on President Trump. That's exactly how it's going to be interpreted. I'm not saying correctly, but possibly it is possible that he feels that there's more there. But again, that's a pretty active judge in that setting. Because you would think that would be coming instead from the special prosecutor, who had to basically step in and say, well, we didn't have evidence of treason after the judge brought up treason. So somebody decided to scare somebody today. That's going to be a big news item through the rest of the day and a talk item. But then again, let's be honest. It's like everything else. At midnight, poof, goes away. Midnight's the bewitching hour. That's how it is, Brock. You get to midnight, the most important thing of the day, the most important thing of life, the most important thing of the world goes poof, goes away. And we'll have another one tomorrow. We have that stock market turbulence. But really what I was focusing on here is this thank you message that came from the Malinger and Wedner families. I read it. It's very personal in a very public context. Some levels, it's inspiring. You could read the faith between the lines and certainly the appreciation in bold letters. I thought it was powerful, meaningful, reflective of some strength or power that is difficult to imagine and makes us better for it. Lynn from Squirrel Hill writes, because this is the way these people are kind and generous like their mother Rose. 866-391-1020. What does that message do for you? What's your reaction? What's your thought? Start with you, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I think the message is very moving, very touching, very heartfelt. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful message. And like you said, it makes people feel better. But since that shooting happened, lots of people have been shot and killed. And we don't know the names of probably any of them. And all the rest of those families where that happened received no support like happened at the synagogue. So, you know, is it worse because it was the kind of shooting that it was? Because I think if you lose a family member to gun violence, it's the most horrible thing that could happen. Yet we only ever offer all this solace when it's like a synagogue or a school or somewhere else, and we forget about all the individual families that the same thing happens to.
Well,
but the message, the thank you note, is wonderful.
Okay, let me go back and forth.
But my problem is, you know, why do we not show the same level of compassion for every killing?
Well, I mean, that's
why do some receive more compassion?
I don't know, nor do I know if you have an end in mind, but I would say a couple of things. Number one, that's very personal for people to decide on their own. Number two, if nothing else, this has been a very personal issue in our backyard, and that's why this particular tragedy and this message of thanks and gratitude is so important to us. If this was written in the Texas El Paso paper, no one would know about it. And candidly, that's one of the things we all said afterwards we take up, maybe being more empathetic to those places where we have, if not nameless people, then certainly faceless people and those that we become sad about and move on. This is a little bit more difficult. As for whether other people within the synagogue that have decided to do this or not, I don't know if you're going there. Again, it's a very personal decision. I just found it to be heartwarming. I found it to be inspiring and trying to be better, trying to be a better person out of their tragedy.
I agree with everything you said. My only thing is I wish we would show the same lesson to everyone who loses a family member to gun violence.
Well,
not just put it toward when it happens at the synagogue or happens at a church or happens in a mass setting.
But see,
it's just as devastating.
I believe you. I believe you, sir. Believe me, I'm on record of all, you know, I could curtail assault weapons off the street and have my life continue just fine. And I think a lot of us could. Having said that, That's the second or third time you said just in the synagogue, and it implies that you're minimizing it. The fact that it happened in a place of worship actually does just the opposite. It maximizes it. Does it do it so that perhaps we then lose sight of other shootings and other victims? That's a possibility. Is it possible that we have become so jaded and feel so normalized with this? That's possible. But the reality is what separates this beyond any other measure is the fact that it happened at a place of prayer. And so I would just suggest that the idea of I don't want to read anything further into it than your mind, than your words. I would just say that if this occurred at any place of worship, the reaction would, I believe, be as consistent. So, for instance, in Charleston, where we had the black church there that had the shooting by the white nationalist, see, that to me was the end, because you know that was a place where that's evil incarnate. And that's what happened in Squirrel Hill. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not here grading different levels of mass versus individual violence or the impact or lack of impact or lack of messaging between public and private shootings and killings and so forth. They're all horrible. They're all horrible. We start with the idea that they're all heinous, evil acts of the devil. That's where we start. Doing it in a church community or a temple community elevates that. Just my thoughts. And that's why when I read this and was as touched as many of you have been, it takes on even greater meaning to me. I don't expect a flood of these. I don't expect everybody to line up and say, listen, let me just thank you. Not that there'd be anything wrong with that. But, I mean, again, I would be so far still into the grieving process, the idea of putting these words to paper and making this advertisement as a way to say, thank you, you're making us better, is extraordinarily profound and very meaningful and very reflective of this community and very reflective of who we are, the best of who we are. Sadly, if I read you some of the text messages I got today, I could very easily alarm you with perspectives that are the worst of who we are, the worst. I choose to emphasize the best, and that's why you won't hear the worst. And I thank them for thanking us. I'm Ellis Cannon. All right, our final window here. Ellis Cannon, it's been a... good afternoon with you. Thank you so much. I see, speaking of guns, that I guess the administration is moving forward with banning bump stocks. So let's put a kudos to that. The president suggested that previously, and I don't know where it's headed, but that's what the headlines are now. Saw them earlier today. Let's see where it goes. We don't need those. And I'm happy to see that the administration taking that position. So the call from Butler was not exactly welcomed. Why is a death by a firearm worse than a knife, a baseball bat, or someone's fist? It makes no sense. It comes from unnamed. I'm not so sure that he was quite intimating that. I think, quite honestly, he was more like firearm versus firearm. Okay, this is Brian from Moon. That guy on the air right now is a jagoff. He would complain, that's my word, if you gave him $1 million, he'd complain about the taxes. I'm Brian in Moon. Let's get to Ken in Southside. We've been talking about the thank you message. Obviously, what are your thoughts, Ken?
I didn't really know anything about the thank you message, but the gentleman on the air, as soon as he said the phrase, but, I knew there was an issue coming. I mean, I can remember victims like Taylor Cole, who was gunned down at Mr. T's sandwich shop in Homewood about 2002. There's a little innocent 9-year-old girl. I can think of Marianne Dervecchio, who was missing, and Bill Burns talked about it. Commander Teresa Rocco dedicated her career to find this. There's all kind of victims. I think this tragedy was significant because it was the largest tragedy that occurred, mass killing that occurred in a synagogue in North America. It doesn't minimize anybody else's lives. It's all sadness, and we just pray for good things to happen and that all people are remembered. But to start to compare one victim to another victim, it just, to me, I'd have just cut the guy off.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I mean, I had a sense there was a butt coming as well. I appreciate and respect how you would have handled it. I wanted to give him an opportunity to explain. In fact, whether he was just, I think there was an element of him seeking to ask why people are glorified because they may have been in a synagogue, as opposed to minimizing those for those that are more, if I could possibly say this with a straight face, and please don't take it out of context, a more run-of-the-mill, normal killing, because that's where we are. We have normalized all this, so there's no reason to hide it.
Right.
You know, maybe he wants to see those maximized. Maybe that was the upshot of what he was trying to say, and so I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, and that's really what I was doing. But, no, as I said to you, as I said, Ken and Southside, I'm not in the game. I'm not in the game of trying to give different grades of gray for mass murders.
It's just sadness. That's all.
That's it.
All right, man.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
Your call. Hey, what did that? What did you in fact hear what I read? The thank you message.
No, sir, I did not. I didn't know anything about it. I just heard the gentleman, and I just thought, you know, there's more important things in the world than his opinion of which death is more significant than others.
Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, that things happen on live radio. And, you know, if that call came in at 107 or 1207, Brock and I would huddle up and we'd know exactly where we would go with that. I think it would probably get a lot of people fired up, as some local comments have as well, regarding the political push with gun control in Pittsburgh and a comparison to those shootings. But, you know, again, I always go back to what I've said a thousand times, if you will. You know, it's about hate, and it's about hate, it's about evil, and it's about the devil, and that's it. And that's when all of those are manifested. And yes, they could occur in, you know, place where, again, somebody may consider only three people killed. There's no only. My concern there was when he said just because synagogue. He said that a couple of times, and that jumped out at me. But again, let's leave it at that. Let's give benefit of the doubt and see where we go with it. The conversation's certainly not going to be end. Here's something just got popped on my phone. Washington Post, government shutdown still possible after Democrats reject new GOP offer on immigration border security funding. So there's that. And that will get played down to the last moment or beyond. We've made a political football out of all that. I read a piece today that suggested that when we start talking about government shutdowns, and there's a personal component to it, obviously, the employees and their friends and relatives and so forth, but that working for the federal government right now has become such a chore to many people within the government. I'm not talking about chief of staffs and stuff, that I recently saw, I believe that the morale rate is very, very, very low, and it's measured in a way where something like only 60% of people working in it would suggest people on the outside come in. So these things have real impact. They have real personal impact, and they make for not just a morale issue, but one would arguably say a productive issue, a production issue, an efficiency issue, all of which is the last thing we need in any government.